At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
James Craig, the dentist. That's what we're going to be talking about today. And the double life of James Craig and the psychological persona he presented to the world. What personality disorders or traits allow someone to convincingly play the devoted husband role and father while allegedly plotting murder? That's the big question we're going to ask. This is a man who allegedly poisoned his wife's smoothie multiple times over with arsenic and the chemical found in Visine teardrops, which I guess is poisonous. Who would have known? And slowly she passed away, all while having an affair, having sugar babies, all sorts of things on the side, and trying to operate a dental practice that was falling apart. So we're going to start there. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, joining us. Author of the book, The Minds of Mass Killers, and her own autobiography out right now as well, Nightbird. Get them wherever books are sold. Siobhan, let's start there. I mean, what could be going on here? Because it's been a red flag for me on this guy from the beginning. It doesn't just seem like this is a let's kill my wife to get with a younger chick sort of thing. This seems more delusional. He's talking about believing things people might be after him for. There, I mean, who knows? Maybe they are, because he seems like kind of a shady dude. But there does seem to be something more at play here, especially in terms of grandiosity, thinking he can pick off people from prison and whatnot. What do you think might be going on here in the James Craig story?
Well, you sure got narcissism. You've got a guy who compartmentalizes really effectively, but is very self-aggrandizing, thinks he's got power that, you know, obviously he didn't. He got caught. And he wants to keep up an image, you know. He wants to look like this loving husband and father, this terrific dentist. And I guess his employees actually thought he was a great guy. So this is a person very invested in his appearance, but clearly he's got a sadistic streak and a psychopathic streak. You talk about manipulative.
Let's talk about that for a second and really get into the why of narcissists, people with narcissistic personality disorder more specifically, have such an obsession with image. Is it because they are so uncomfortable in who they are at a baseline? Because at the baseline, it's this guy who is having ideas run through his mind of let's murder my wife, let's do these horrible things. But if he turns that switch on and puts on the persona of happy-go-lucky dentist and comes across to people as this positive figure, you know, almost, you know, kind of outspoken, a bit verbose, those louder folks that are, they're there, they got the personality, they're always on. He seems like he was probably that type of guy when he was in a better place. I mean, that ruse that they put on, why run to that? Why is it so difficult to take a look at oneself from a deeper perspective and go, maybe I should fix this and I don't have to do all that?
There are different theories about why people develop this way. And of course, one theory, probably the common one in the culture, is that they have this internal sense of inadequacy, that they're never good enough. And because of that distress, they learn really early in life to put on this facade, which makes them look successful, makes them feel better about themselves. But there's also, you know, as we're studying so much more about genetics and the interaction of genetics and early environment, some people are just born a bit different and don't have that sense of conscience that the rest of us have. And so there can be multiple things going on with a person like this, but they sure learn young in life that they can manipulate people. And very often they've been raised by parents who fall for it. Mm-hmm. And so it works well for them. They're Machiavellian in that way.
Does it start out in someone like this? Like if you were to look back and theorize, you know, James Craig, obviously innocent till proven guilty. We should say that everything here in this conversation is alleged and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But with someone like James Craig, if you were to look back at his childhood, do you think you'd find something where very early on, he was, you know, kind of an odd duck, maybe didn't fit in, was kind of the dork, and then had to strive, had to really go far. I mean, he became a successful dentist to a certain extent. I mean, that takes a lot of school, takes a lot of work, takes some smarts to get there. That's not just like, hey, anybody who wants to do it can do it. You do take, has some talent there. So obviously he found an area of life where his skills could be used and he could be looked at in a positive way. And then he went far with it. Is that where we find a lot of drive in some folks like this, where you can go really far when used in the right way, but if you never quite address the darker part of you, that resentful part of you that was bullied, and try to make some sort of peace there, it just seems to continue to fester, and that becomes your norm, and this fake version of you is what people see. But if you get back to the real you, it's a dangerous person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure could be that he had wounds early in life, you know, and you mentioned school, peer groups could be that. And so this was what he came up with to compensate for it. Or he may have been the little charmer in first grade, you know, who already just sort of came out of the chute with this manipulative streak. It's hard to know.
Are there any markers in people like this who are able to seemingly split their lives into compartments with zero guilt? Like if you're an employee of James Craig while he was a dentist, I mean, if you didn't know his deep life of what was going on, of all these side women while he's married, while his wife is dying, literally, that one would notice and go, maybe there's something more to this guy. But they seem to be able to keep it very well hidden and very, exactly the word is, compartmentalized off. It's not always the easiest to see, but are there cracks sometimes and markers that are visible?
Sometimes there are cracks. And I think I mentioned this story a while back, but it's relevant. Early in my practice, I was subletting an office from a therapist who was very charming. He was good looking, charismatic. He, you know, attracted a lot of clients because he was, you know, a good communicator. He was so likable. And over time, this was in a very small community. I was approached by different business people in town, because you really couldn't keep secrets in a small community, that he was writing hot checks. And he knew he was writing hot checks to local businesses. So, you know, there's an element of stupid with that.
Yeah.
And I immediately said, whoa, I'm getting out of here because I don't want this to rub off on me. But it was really surprising how well, you know, this person could perform. And later on, there came, he wasn't killing anybody, far as I know, but these other secrets that, you know, were this other part of him started to come out. So it's really hard to know up front. And you don't know maybe until you've known somebody a long time and then you start to see some evidence.
And they're doing it not in a way that I think some of us we on the outside would be looking at it. Like you would be looking at it going, oh my God, this is horrible behavior. Like you shouldn't mm-hmm. be writing hot checks. That's not an okay mm-hmm. thing. But in his mind, it's probably not saying the same thing. It's somehow justifying this behavior because of something. Sometimes it's mm-hmm. a slight. Sometimes it's, well, if this didn't happen, I wouldn't have to do this.
Right.
In that case there, that one specifically that you gave an example of, how do you think he was justifying that in his mind?
He justified all sorts of things. Yeah, he was getting calls because I started really paying attention to the voicemails left on the phone. And this was in the days when, before everybody had their individual cell phones, there was one phone for the office. And I started listening very carefully to the messages that were left. And there were bill collectors all the time calling for him and leaving those threatening messages that bill collectors do. And when I confronted him on that, it was just, you know, there was always an excuse. There was always a reason. It was a mistake.
Yeah.
And so I think these folks tell themselves stories in order to justify what they do. And they believe it. They yeah. just perceive the world very differently. And that's how you know you're dealing with a personality disorder, because it's the way they go through life perceiving things through a very different lens than the rest of us.
I would say a big one is if you're getting to know somebody and there's a lot of red flags around, like people coming at them with something like bill collectors or whatever it may be, and the answer is typically written off as, oh, it's all a misunderstanding.
Very much.
It's all a misunderstanding. Very much. Nothing to worry about. It's just a misunderstanding. And then mm-hmm. it's like, how many misunderstandings do you have with people? Because mm-hmm. I don't think most of us live our life in a consistent state of misunderstanding with
yeah.
others.
Yeah. And the other interesting component of this, I was friends with his wife, who was also a therapist. Mm-hmm. And she had absolutely no clue. She eventually did figure it out, probably at bankruptcy time. Oops, you know. Yeah. And so they divorced, but I spoke with her later about it, and he had completely hidden his spending and his deceptive stuff with finances from her. She had no idea. And she was a smart woman.
Yeah. Another element to things like this, where people get so deceptive and they find ways of justifying it in their mind and to others, would be the religious angle. Craig was a member of the LDS Mormon Church. It again comes up so damn often on this program with people that are making really weird, bad decisions that are hiding things, but seemingly being driven by some sort of narrative or some sort of shame. How do you think that could have added pressure to maintain, you know, the sightliness, to maintain an image that others won't truly see the dark side of?
It's almost like that faith, whether it's the Mormon church or a different church, it serves as a cover for predatory people. They find that they can play the role. It's pretty easy to fool the folks that they go to church with mm-hmm. who don't know them well. They certainly don't know the dark side. And it's sort of like, you know, the priest who molests altar boys. Yeah. I mean, it's like, here's the perfect cover for you because everybody thinks you're this wonderful person.
Yeah. Let's talk about the method to the killing in this this case, poison. It wasn't a, you know, I got into your room and stabbed you repeatedly, or shooting where you'd think, you know, crime of passion, where they're really in. But this almost seems more intimate. I mean, this is slow. This is not something where mid 80th stab, you're like, shit, this is probably a bad idea. This is, you got months, you got weeks to slowly watch this person die. And there's nothing clicking in you going, maybe I should lay off emptying the Visine into the strawberry smoothies. Like, maybe this is a bit much. He just kept going and kept going, allegedly. Why choose poison? What does it symbolize in a mind like this?
I think poison helps people rationalize that. I mean, again, this is twisted because obviously they're causing it, but it lets them feel like I'm not a violent person. I'm doing something that's, you know, going to be looked down on, but I'm not doing it real directly. I'm doing it, you know, it gives them this sense of control, of power. And obviously they're sadistic to want to draw it out like this and to be able to witness something like this. There's a cruelty. And I don't know any other word other than sadistic. It's a very dark personality quality.
It is, and it's certainly sadistic. It's certainly controlling. I guess what is behind that desire, you know, for that control? Is it the fear of physical confrontation at the end of the day? Like, when it all comes down to it, what is the worst thing that James Craig was fearing? Was it this wife calling him out publicly for having all these affairs with all these women, not being this family man that he's supposedly everyone thinks he is, that would expose him to his church, it would expose him to that community, it would expose him to his social circle, his workplace, all the things. I mean, and then the financial end of it too. She could end up exposing all of that in court as well. Is it that fear of exposure that drives someone like this to take that step of let's eliminate the person who could do the exposing, and then it'll never happen? But it eventually will, because you're just digging your own hole. It's just that one's not going to be the one that does it. It's going to be you yourself that'll expose it. But in that moment, it's not a moment of clarity. It seems like a very much a moment of blinders where they have a false sense of clarity almost.
Right. And thinking that because I'm doing it in this slow, drawn out, subtle way, there's no blood on my hands. Mm-hmm. Nobody's ever going to know. And it's insidious and sadistic, as I say. And interestingly, women are more apt to poison than men are. And I think in that case, it's because they feel they have higher odds of succeeding because women are not as strong as men. They're probably not going to try to stab them. But it sure shows the ability to turn off any empathy. And this is probably a person that maybe go through life feigning empathy, pretending to be a nice guy, but in truth, there's a black hole there. There isn't anything.
Yeah, I mean, it, when you look at it in the sadistic end of it, do you think James Craig, if he did this, was watching his wife die and getting some sort of thrill out of this, or was that more of an inconvenience? Like, come on, hurry the process up. Mm-hmm. You know, or is it a some sort of a pleasure, some sort of a God complex where it's like, I'm in control of this.
Mm-hmm. My guess, it's the latter, that he gets a sense of power out of the control. And also, people like this often get a sense of pleasure out of, look what I'm doing and nobody else knows. So I'm fooling everybody. I'm fooling the doctors even. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, incredibly dark.
I mean, witnesses said Craig was calm, even jovial at the hospital. Mm-hmm. It didn't really raise a lot of red flags to a lot of people. But this is also the same guy who came into the hospital, allegedly. I don't know if he just walked in scrubs or if he went to the bathroom and threw some scrubs on, went into the room of his wife, allegedly, and administered more poison right there in front of other people where they... Well, this is another guy in him. I don't know who he is, but okay. And, you know, nobody is the wiser on something like this. And then he just, not like face covering or anything that looks suspicious, then he gets out of the scrubs, comes back in normal clothes, and nobody's like, you went to the guy in scrubs earlier, like poisoning your wife. I mean, that's an interesting thing where there had to have been some moments in that hospital where people are wondering, something odd here, but you can't quite put your finger on it because the guy is coming across one way, saying one thing, but acting in a complete different.
Yeah, that's the uncanny aspect of this, that he could so adeptly role play.
Mm-hmm. What does it say about the relationship here in general and just kind of the mindset of both of these folks? I'm not trying to speak ill of the dead of the wife, but they allegedly had kind of a suicide game of chicken going on where they had been suicidal back and forth at different points in times. Craig is trying to claim that he was at certain points and that she was at other points. One of the arguments that they're trying to make on the defense of Craig is that, well, she was suicidal. He was just helping her along. He got her the poison so she could use it if she wanted to. Have we ever seen a case like this where the partner just, hey, it's over in the kitchen if you want to do it? I mean, it seems bizarre, but in a very unhealthy mindset and in an unhealthy household, I guess that could be a thing.
I have never heard that story. I've heard a lot of weird stories. I have never heard that kind of story before. So it feels to me like a very desperate man who thinks he can spin a tale that people are going to fall for. And I don't buy it at all. I think it's nuts.
There's a family component to this story as well. The manipulation of the family members, especially his daughter, and in the use to cover up the crime. These are not little kids either. These are 20-somes. These are young adults. But obviously still the children of this family. He asked the daughter to try and create a fake video for evidence to cover up the murder plot. He asked her, and I don't think he has any clue of how any of these things work, but he said, I want you to create allegedly a deep fake video of your mother saying that she wants to kill herself. And then there, boom, we have evidence that it's real, that she wanted to do this. I mean, number one, that's nuts. But like number two, I mean, what does that tell us about this guy in terms of his rationale, his way of thinking? He's willing to put his own daughter at risk for a crime that he allegedly committed, have her just do this at his whim. If there's no crime, if there's nothing to cover up, I mean, obviously the daughter's now testifying against him in court, but the fact that he was so grandiose, he thought he could make this ask of her.
Somebody who, again, has no sense of what it means to really love, because you would never put your kid in a position like that. That's insane. It's bizarre. Your word, perfectly apt word for this. And yeah, it's you go on the dark web and have a deep fake video created is wacky, and it just smacks of desperation. But somebody who sees people as objects to use for their own benefit, and when you will do that to your own kid, that's a pretty dark thing.
Are narcissists, especially people with narcissistic personality disorder, and again, I should say, we're not diagnosing him. We don't know what he has. We can't say that, but certainly there's a lot of signs of narcissism in this guy. Are they not good at recognizing minds as they grow in terms of connecting that with their grooming? Where maybe for a long time as a father, when she was younger, I mean, it's easier to manipulate a younger person. That's just how that works. I mean, hopefully you're doing it not as manipulation, but as teaching and learning and helping them grow as a good person. But it could go in the other way too, if you're going to fill their mind with nonsense. I'm wondering, was that an overstep on his part where for so long he thought, you know, it's my little girl, I can convince her this or that, and now she's, you know, 21, 22, and it doesn't work the same way.
And narcissistic people, it's a hallmark. They do tend to see their kids as an extension of themselves, and they use their kids, you know, to boost their own ego, to make them feel good. That's why you see parent-child relationships when the kids grow up, they often have a breach in the relationship because the kids don't want to go along with it anymore. But I think you can say narcissism is on a continuum. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, a lot of parents do damage to their kids because they're a little bit narcissistic. This is off the chart. This is in the bizarre category.
What do you think was going on in in that household leading up to this? And this is kind of the question of others out there that may be watching this going, I have somebody in my life that kind of has some of these traits, not necessarily down to the, you know, exact words of they're a dentist practicing in Colorado buying arsenic, but someone with these sort of signs. What do you think life was like in the home, if we're assuming this guy was a narcissist, leading up to the poisoning, leading up to that actually taking place for his wife, Angela, before the arsenic started making it into the smoothies?
I would guess that he was role-playing the part of a loving husband. And, you know, some of the texts that we've seen between the two of them were very lovey-dovey. And this could have all been very much part of his cover-up for what he was really doing on the side with other women, was piling on praise to her, doing these superficial things, making smoothies for her every morning. And you know, it was all part of this ruse that he had going. And it certainly sounds like it worked.
Yeah. You know, it certainly does seem like it did. Do you think Angela could have sensed the danger as things had start to ramp in that direction? Or when you're with someone for that long, I'm going to guess craziness, crazy behavior that would be evident to others may not be so crazy because it's been normalized for so long.
Right, right. Yeah. The frog in the hot water. Mm-hmm. She got used to certain things being a bit off and probably did not see it. And, you know, it's just a tragedy that she was bamboozled and ended up dead by this guy.
Mm-hmm. Would you call it denial when you're in a relationship like that? Or what is that? Is it just you're just missing it just because the water got hot and you were in it? Mm-hmm. I mean, because sometimes you can look at things retrospectively if you survive. And mm-hmm. and it's easier then to go, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, the signs, you know, were kind of there. And you can kind of look yourself go, yeah, maybe I was just kind of denying that.
People have amazing abilities to not see what's right in front of them sometimes. And denial is a good word for it. But sometimes there just aren't signs. And so it's not as much denial as you were just with a really sharp con man who was doing all sorts of things to trick you.
You know, it's one of those things where unless you've been through it and you understand what life is like with someone like that, it's hard to relate and it's hard to, you know, to give advice that's going to be meaningful or effective. But I would imagine if there had been any bumps in the road and if she was talking to people, this is all just pure speculation. You'd have friends and family. Oh, well, maybe, you know, some counseling, maybe, you know, a little marriage right. counseling together is going to fix it. Give it a chance. You've been together for so long. You got all these kids. You don't want to blow. There's all those things and finances. I mean, it's all wound up into this big, tight ball of hell that you really can't escape from in any sort of easy way. I would imagine that those sort of things also would keep someone in a place longer than they otherwise, you know, would be had there not been all those factors there. I would take it this is probably someone that even if they sat down with the best couples therapist, you're never going to get anywhere with. What would it have been like had Angela and Mr. Killer Dentist here, James Craig, ended up in a couples therapist's office?
He would have done his very best to bamboozle the therapist. And oh my gosh, I have seen that happen. And I've seen it work. Because as I always say, therapists aren't lie detectors. I often thought I'd love to have a lie detector in my office because mm-hmm. there were sure some people I would have liked to hook up to it, you know. But yeah, for a person like this to ever benefit from therapy, I doubt it. I don't see how, because there's no honesty there. He's not honest with anyone. He's not honest with himself. And the only people who benefit from therapy are people who come in and want to look at, you know, at their own shit. They want to understand themselves. They want to do better. They want to change. And that's not a person like this. If anything, when they go to therapy, they go in to be self-aggrandizing, to charm the therapist, and to play victim about how other people are being so unfair to them for trying to assign consequences when they behave badly.
And that's the thing. I mean, obviously, we're big proponents of therapy here on the program. It's kind of what you do. And yeah. It's obviously it's great when the right person gets it because they want it and they need it. But it can all what's the word I'm looking for here? Can it make basically the symptoms of narcissism, can it exacerbate the symptoms because it, for the right person? Because it's actually doing the opposite. It's feeding, it's giving gasoline to something that's already on fire.
It's a really good point, because therapists come into this work, if you're a good therapist, because you really care about people and you want to be affirming to people. And most people come in with a lot of self-criticism, depression, anxiety, they're struggling, they're suffering. And so therapists tend to have a manner that's very soothing and very comforting. And if they don't catch that they're dealing with a narcissist, they may be just feeding their ego and actually amplifying the problem rather than taking it in a direction where they're going to be confronting some of this manipulative behavior. So I think particularly with young therapists or overly nurturing therapists who aren't seeing the whole picture and aren't getting collateral information, they're not helping. And therapy then just turns into a session of someone coming in and complaining about how other people are unfair to them and how wonderful they are. And the therapist may validate that. I've sure had people try to do that with me. And they're not people I enjoy working with, because you don't make any progress. And the other relevant piece with this is that there is such an emphasis in many faith groups, including the Mormon Church, with holding the family together and saving every marriage. And, you know, if you just have faith and follow the rules and do everything right, this marriage can be saved. And that's a myth. There are a lot of marriages, relationships that should not be saved. And that's another reason I am very reticent at this point in my career to do lots and lots of couples therapy, because I think I've gotten pretty good at spotting personality disorders. And when a couple comes in and they really are saying, we want to save this marriage, but I identify one with a pretty severe personality disorder, that's not really my goal. That's not what I see as being a healthy thing. And so I've had to come up with my way of maneuvering in that situation, so I don't feel like I'm just validating something that's really pretty twisted.
And that's a big thing. I mean, if you have one, especially both, in a relationship with a personality disorder, a severe one like this, yeah, that person shouldn't be in any relationship. Ain't nobody that's going to mesh with in any sort of healthy level. That person needs to get good on their own, but unfortunately they never see it as a problem, so they never do. Yeah, it's a fun land out there. Let's go here. When we break this down, I want to ask you first, before we talk more about James Craig, have you had a situation in your career, maybe early on? Because imagine earlier on, it's more difficult, or you're easy to fall into the trap of someone who is a narcissist and a manipulator that is acting like they want to get help, but they're just using it as the echo chamber to hear themselves hear about how great they are. What is that like? And can you give me any examples of how you eventually break through that? Like, what are some of the signs where you go, oh, I really thought this person was this for a while, but this showed me that from like a clinical standpoint?
It usually comes up when there's some kind of external information. And at that point, you know, you hear about somebody being arrested, some kind of a violent altercation that they have, Yeah, I've got stories. And so how do you then deal with, okay, we've got to move toward a shift here. I'm not just going to validate what a wonderful person you are. We're going to have to talk about these other things that happened. And did you have a contribution to this rather than just being a victim? And so you have to kind of shift gears. And at that point, that's when most of them will drop therapy and you become unpopular in their eyes because you just didn't adore them. Now, I've got a really funny story. When I was practicing in a very small town, I was seeing one gentleman who clearly had some psychopathic traits. He had been in prison. He was very manipulative, and I could see these things up front. And he was difficult to work with, as these folks are, but I was kind of plugging away slowly with it and seeing if we could get any insight and get him to take some responsibility. And he was on the dating apps. And I was also seeing another young woman who was on the dating apps, and she was a lovely, delightful person. And she came in one day talking about this wonderful new man she met, and she mentioned his first name, which was rather unique, and she mentioned his profession, which was rather unique. He was a pot grower at the time. But she just thought he was a great guy. And I had an oh shit response because he was also my client. And I so wanted to grab her by the shoulders and say, run the other way. But of course, confidentiality, you can't do that. And that was quite an ethical dilemma. And then he came in talking about her. And before long, they had been out drinking and they each confided in each other, well, I go to therapy. And then they each shared who their therapist was. And they figured out that they were both my clients. So, yeah, that was one where I just had to really reinforce with her the idea of being cautious, having good judgment, but I could never directly tell her anything about him, even though I felt very protective of her and sure wanted to. But that may be my next book someday, being a therapist in a very small town, the dilemmas that happen. I've got a lot of stories like that.
I bet, because I mean, it was probably somewhat of a therapy island where there wasn't a lot of folks to go to. So
exactly,
if somebody did want to do it, your odds of crossover are pretty high.
Very high. And when I saw a lot of children when my kids were young in the 90s, I was treating lots of kids. And when my son was in high school, there were two different girls that he was dating that he brought home to meet mom. And they said, you were my therapist when I was in third grade. And I'm like, hi.
Get away from my son.
I know way more about you and your family than I really need to know. And it was very awkward. And of course, if they hadn't have said anything, I couldn't say anything.
Yeah.
But they both came in and said, oh, hi, you were my therapist. So, yeah, it's much more comfortable in Portland where we've got, you know, 600,000 people. I'm not having that crossover all
the
time.
Did they continue to date the young women that you knew far too much about?
I knew far too much. Is Grandpa still a pedophile, you know?
Oh,
it's like, yeah.
That's a weird one. That's a good one. That'd be great for that book, Siobhan. That would be a great book. It really
would. It was really why I moved to a large city. It's like, you know, all these years in this tiny little town, I've got to get out of here.
And you chose Portland.
I couldn't vote for a politician in town.
Sure,
I knew all their sordid stories.
Yeah.
It's like, I just couldn't handle it after a while.
Let me ask you this one. Another, it's just kind of a hypothetical. From what we know about him, I mean, if Craig sat in your office today, what would you be looking for clinically?
I would be hoping there would be some depression, because that would be at least a sign that he's got one foot in reality at this point. But I might not be seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might be seeing this person who's still maintaining this grandiose image, who sees himself as a victim. And it's all so unfair, and he's been set up, and of course he didn't do any of this. That would be my guess.
Mm-hmm.
And if you called him out on why were you ordering cyanide, you know, from Amazon or whatever the heck it was, arsenic, cyanide, oleander leaves, all the things that he was, you know, looking into, that there would be an excuse for it.
Yeah.
And so I would have to keep going back to, but here's the evidence. Here's the evidence. Here's the evidence. And see if you can get a crack in the story. And then if you get a crack in the story, you would probably get some kind of faux tears, you know, role playing. And again, it's designed to manipulate the therapist and hook you in.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy who there's a lot of things after the fact, after this crime took place, that has dug him an even deeper hole. And that's where I'm thinking, like, this guy is not operating in reality anymore. I feel like there's some delusion stuff going on here. I mean, he, beyond the asking the daughter to create a deep fake video of mom confessing that she's going to kill herself, he went to an inmate who's now testified in court against him, asking him to help create or to get to some of the friends of his wife so they could tell stories that she was suicidal. Also wanting to put a hit out on the prosecutor, offering $20,000 for the hit on the I mean, these are very grandiose requests of just another inmate in jail. And at first it was just hearsay. Now there's a letter and it's in his handwriting and it's very well written. It's not written as one would, you know, guess out of a prison where it's more of, you know, a fourth grade writing level. This is written like a doctor. It's written very well and in his tone and in his manner. What does that tell you about his mindset today, that he thinks just requesting these sort of things are going to be successful, number one, or number two, that they're even going to happen?
It's crazy. And is it delusional? Could be.
Yeah.
Could be. We don't have any other evidence of psychosis, you know, hallucinations, auditory, hearing voices, nothing like that. So probably not, you know, a true psychosis, but it's not grounded in reality. And it shows really poor judgment, as so much of what he's done shows really poor judgment. And I think it's his way of doubling down on a very pathological defense mechanism that ultimately has got him in prison, you know, and he's going to be there forever, it looks like. So why would a person take it to this extent? This is a really twisted guy. He does not perceive anything like the rest of us.
Yeah, I think that's the answer. The prism is off, and that's why none of this makes sense. Does someone like that, I mean, is it possible someone like this really believes his own things that he's saying out there? Because it was noted, Eric Faddis, who's one of our contributors, has been in the courtroom. He noted that when the letter came up, when it wasn't just hearsay and it was like, look, this is in your writing, this is your own words, this is all that, he seemed to deflate from being kind of a verbose character in court, like, I'm strong, I'm interacting with my counsel, I'm part of this, to, oh, shit. I mean, that certainly shows some knowledge that he got caught. But could there be a on and off switch here where he goes in and out of believing he's justified and right in this to, the emperor has no clothes on?
I think he
want more on this.
He's right, because that's the story he tells himself. But he knows that in the eyes of the rest of the world, it's not okay. And so it's this constant, what can I do to get away with this? And the story he tells himself justifies it, which twisted.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It will never make sense. It's like in the Koberger case. At the end of the day, it's like, why? What's the motive? And with people like this, it doesn't really matter because it doesn't make sense. It's a broken prism. Why are things coming out of this? Because the prism's broken. There's a giant crack right there. That's why the colors and the rainbows are flipping out in different ways than you'd expect them to. It's broke. That's
Completely.
The answer. And that's the answer sometimes. Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist, author, Nightbird, her new memoir. It's at wherever you get books, and also The Minds of Mass Killers, if you want to dive into that as well. Both great reads on all the stuff we talk about right here. Siobhan, thank you as always for being on and giving us your insight.
My pleasure.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1-cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.